So today I've been asked to speak about mineralogy in arid climates, and the most significant process in arid landscapes is the accumulation of soluble minerals. And luckily for us, there are all these beautiful minerals that accumulate in great quantities. We have some gorgeous carbonates, and as Bob talked about earlier this morning, a lot of times these carbonates co-precipitate with amorphous silica, palygorskite, and sepalite. We also have a wide array of sulfates. Chlorides are usually just halite, and some of you may or may not know, these soils also contain some gorgeous nitrates, iodates, chromates, borates, perchlorate. It's amazing the different types of minerals we can find in these soils. What controls the mineral variability and the amount of salt in these soils? Well, obviously the five soil-forming factors, but the biggest one, of course, is water. How much water and when it happens. Whether or not you have life controls whether or not you have carbonate minerals. And then for all of the other salt minerals, it depends on the chemistry to make those ions available to form them. So with calcium carbonate, it will not form in a soil in a pedogenic process unless you have plants respiring. So here we are in Jordan, lots of crops there, and arid and semi-arid climate, and lots of carbonate. Whereas in the Atacama Desert in Chile, we don't have any plants, and there is no pedogenic carbonate because there's just not enough CO2 to form it in today's atmospheric levels. And then all of those other minerals, so I just put up gypsum as an example, but what you need is you have to have the right ions to get those minerals in the soil. So those ions can come from the original parent material, or like Jimmy told us earlier, you can get it through the parent material with groundwater help. A lot of times in these soils that these ions are blown in or washed in from somewhere where we do have the parent material exposed. If you live along a coast, sea spray is an awesome contributor of salts. Specifically, if you have sulfide minerals present, volcanic gases, industrial pollution will all contribute the ions necessary. And then atmospheric reactions also produce sulfates and nitrates, and this happens all over the planet. It's just in these really arid climates where we see them accumulating in the soils. So how does salt mineralogy vary across the landscape and at what scale? Well, the key is water, and the amount and type of soluble minerals that you get on these different geomorphic positions across the landscape can vary greatly. It's controlled, like I said, by all of the five soil-forming factors. You may not have any salt up here if there's enough water to leach it out, or if there's not a source to bring it in, whereas here in the playa you may have a significant amount of salt, and it may be blowing downwind and to basically accumulate in another upland area. Again, the key is water. So if you're up here in this higher geomorphic position and the water's moving downward, the carbonate will precipitate first and then gypsum and then more soluble salts. Whereas if you're in a playa area, you usually won't even have the carbonate present because of the common ion effect, and instead you'll have gypsum at depth and then more soluble salts at the surface. So the great thing is that these salt minerals record water movement, and because of that, we can use them to infer paleoclimate, prevailing wind direction. They're a great tool to understand landscape evolution, and we can also use them to understand the tectonic stability of these landforms and for things such as earthquake hazards. Obviously, our climate has changed greatly in the last 2.5 million years. We've had at least 18 different ice ages, and for most of these arid regions, what happens during an ice age is it gets wetter. And so oftentimes, if it is wetter, you can actually erase the previous minerals and we'll lose them. But when it does get drier, the new salt minerals can overprint the older minerals that precipitated during the glacial period. And in fact, most all of our arid landscapes have become more arid since the late Pleistocene, and so they can be a great record of paleoclimate on that time scale. And if we look at Death Valley for an example, today we just have a dry playa out here, but during the Pleistocene, this area was a lake. And up here on the alluvial fans, we had carbonate precipitating in the soil. And then what happened during the Holocene is the lake dried up, and now we have the salt flat down here, and all these salts are being blown up on the alluvial fans. And so we're getting overprinting by gypsum, glauberite, halite, bornite, all sorts of minerals, whatever happens to be blowing in from the playa. Now, this system is also complicated by internal controls, generally desert pavements, and vesicular horizons are mostly developed in the Holocene, and they decrease the depth of wetting. So here's a beautiful vesicular horizon. You can see all the vesicular pore spaces. They're not interconnected. And so not only do you now get this whole layer of silt here that wasn't previously there, but also the water doesn't flow through it very well. And so the result is you can get a lot of salt hanging up right at the bottom of that vesicular horizon, and you can end up with a suite of minerals that actually kind of suggests upward movement of water, but if you're not careful to look at it, that's not what actually happened. Instead, you simply just had this decrease in depth of wetting. So soil mineralogy is controlled by many things, water being the big, most important, dust, which is also linked with plants, time, how geomorphic stability of the surface, topography. Humans play a huge role, especially our land use patterns today. We're really affecting what kind of salt can blow in, and also the soil architecture itself. What next I'd like to talk about is that these arrows that are all pointing toward mineralogy can also point the other way. And an example for that is a study we did in the Atacama Desert with Jason Rack and Amy Brock and a couple of other students on pattern ground in the Atacama. And this study is just inland from Antofagasta, and it's three sites we looked at, which were 1,300 and 1,500 meters in elevation. We do have a little bit of climate data there. We average of 16 degrees Celsius and 4 millimeter rain, which actually occurred in one event. So extremely arid. We do know it's rained at least once, maybe more than that in the last 100 years. And this is what the soils look like. The upper part of the horizons consist of an unconsolidated soil and then completely salt-cemented gravels underneath it. And this upper unconsolidated part has a vesicular horizon at the top, and then underneath it this columnar structure, a B horizon, which is full of gypsum, bastnaesite, and anhydrite. And then this beautiful white layer underneath here, this BZ horizon, is pyrithanardite. And that overlies this salt-cemented gravels, which can be up to 300 centimeters thick. It's probably a lot thicker than that. We just couldn't get exposures. And it's poorly sorted coarse sand and gravel clasts, which have been cemented by petogenic halite, sodium nitrate, and globerite. We have bulk densities that are 2.3, and soluble salt content down in these BZM horizons are close to 40%. All of these soil profiles are characterized by vertical cracks. The vertical cracks occur at two scales. We have the small scale vertical cracks, 1 to 5 centimeters, which are just up here in the unconsolidated horizons, and they terminate at the base of that salt cemented gravels. And if you look at the mineralogy in the cracks, we see gypsum in the center of the cracks, we have bastnaesite on the edges, and if you go to the interior of the beds, it's anhydrite. And then the large scale cracks can be up to 60 centimeters width and up to 5 meters depth. And this is the lamina of the crack here going into the BZM horizons. And we see gypsum and anhydrite in the lamina, but if you go into the massive part of the cemented BZM horizons, it's halite, sodium nitrate, and globerite, and very little globerite. It's almost all halite and sodium nitrate. And this is what the cracks look like underneath. They mine this whole area for nitrates. If you scrape off the overlying unconsolidated soil, you can see these vertical cracks, and you can see the lamina, and that white there is salt. And unfortunately, that slide turned out a little dark, but these cracks actually extend into the bedrock, and they tear up the bedrock as well. And this is the unconsolidated soil that's been scraped off for mining activities. So the edges of these crack lamina are upturned and cross-cut by the primary vertical cracks, and they link at depth then to these big horizontal cracks. And the coarse surficial clasts that are at the surface are now sorted into these vertical cracks, and they form pattern ground. And the pattern ground is dominated by the larger scale cracks, not the small scale cracks that I showed in the unconsolidated material. And in the cracks themselves, you can see the clasts are rotated, so the longest dimension is vertical. The pattern ground varies from 1 to 8.5 meters in diameter, at least at the site that we studied. There's a larger pattern ground as well that's available. And currently, the only process known to form both vertical sediment-filled cracks and pattern ground is frost heave. But this mechanism does not explain these processes in the Atacama Desert because it's temperate, it's hyper-arid, and clay shrink swell won't explain it either because these soils have less than 5% clay. So the conclusion is that these cracks and the pattern ground is forming through salt heave, expansion and contraction that is caused by repeated salt mineral dissolution and precipitation, and also thermal expansion over extended time periods. The soils I'm showing you, the surfaces here are about 3 million years old. And a lot of the surfaces in the Atacama are significantly older than that. We have some soils that are 35 million years old that are still at the surface forming today. So the salt heave is caused by two processes. The first one is precipitation of these salt minerals, force of crystallization. This is enhanced by minerals that can hydrate and dehydrate. And for a long time, people thought that hydration and dehydration could occur in the solid state, but it doesn't. Expansion is caused by a volume change when the mineral actually dissolves and re-precipitates. And so this is called through solution hydration. And you don't need to have a rain event for this to happen. All you have to do is change the temperature, the relative humidity, or the pore water chemistry, and one mineral will become unstable and dissolve and re-precipitate as the other. So this process can occur repeatedly, both at the surface or at depth in pore spaces, without the need for rain to actually happen. Also, if you have halite, the presence of halite lowers the transition temperature of at least two of our hydrated pairs that we know of. And we have three hydrated pairs in the Atacama. Also, increased crystallization pressure occurs when salt concentrations are highest, which is exactly what we have in the Atacama. So this will enhance salt heave in these soils. Significant hydraulic pressures can be generated if rapid salt mineral precipitation occurs within pore spaces and water is unable to drain. This would be likely to happen because if these minerals dehydrate, they're going to provide additional water for hydraulic pressures in the pores. Also, crystallization pressures are greatest in materials with small pores. So over time, as these soils become increasingly cemented with salt, the pores are going to get smaller and smaller, and the effects of salt heave will increase. Also, there's lots of reasons here. The mechanical strength of a rock is decreased when salt solution is present. So infiltration of water is going to both enhance crack propagation by decreasing the mechanical strength of the indurated soil, and it's also going to induce salt heave because it's going to cause dissolution and precipitation of the salt minerals. The second mechanism that can cause salt heave is differential thermal expansion. Obviously, this is going to be more important near the surface. The percent linear expansion for most salt minerals is an order of magnitude greater than silicate minerals, and the two minerals that cause the greatest thermal expansion are sodium nitrate and sodium sulfate, which of course is what we have in these soils. And in fact, this is a 90-year-old mine tailing that I was walking across just as the sun came up, and you can see it's a very puffy surface. You actually step through it. And as the sun came up, it was suddenly like I was in a gigantic bowl of Rice Krispies. It was just snap, crackling, popping all around me. The surface was heaving. And it did it for about a half hour, and then it stopped. And I would assume that if I went back in the evening when the sun went down, it would probably do that again. So the whole soil genesis of these soils starts off with increasing accumulation of salt minerals with time. A lot of this is dust that's blown in off of nearby playas. But there's also atmospheric nitrate raining down. And the salt minerals then segregate in the soil with depth according to solubility and depth of wetting. Eventually, the subsurface horizons become indurated. We then reach a threshold in which salt cementation leads to soil cohesion, which allows the tensile stresses to form vertical cracks. The vertical cracks then create preferential pathways for water and dust, and mineral segregation is now controlled by the cracks once those are formed. Salt heave itself cannot occur until enough salt has accumulated to create the cohesion necessary for the tensional stresses to form contraction cracks. And the contraction cracks are then filled with aeolian dust or overlying gravels, which then also become cemented because a lot of the dust that's blowing in is salt. And here you can see some of the great lamina. The crack-filling material prevents the cracks from fully closing during periods of expansion, and thus the salt heave pushes the surface upward. Upward and outward distortion of soil horizons over extended time periods, again we're talking millions of years, form salt wedges and patterned ground. And here you can see mini-scale of these cracks, and the distribution of these cracks is controlled both by salty processes but also tectonics. As you know, the Andes are still quite active, so there's a lot of tectonics. And this really large crack here is probably tectonic in nature, whereas these others are probably salt heave in nature. And these soils are so indurated with salt, they actually affect the geomorphology. Here you can see a salt glacier, a big lobe. Because of the topography, the soil is actually moving downhill. And so the soil mineralogy can affect, in turn, all of the other processes. In this case, it definitely affects our horizons, both at the macro and micro scales. It's also affecting atmospheric processes, because if it cements up that surface, then you're not getting erosion. And I have a study now in the Salton Sea that's showing that soil mineralogy actually controls dust emission. It obviously affects whether or not you have life present. It affects how long that geomorphic landform will be stable, or whether or not it's going to flow downhill like that salt glacier. It affects, in that case, also the topography. And in many cases, it affects humans either through our health or how we live. I'll give a talk tomorrow and talk about a little bit about the salt corrosion and the effect it has on humans. So I hope I gave you a little taste of salt mineralogy across the landscape. Thank you. Slightly wetter. It's been hyper-arid for at least 30, 35 million years. But when we go into the glacial period, it still does affect Chile slightly, but it's still hyper-arid. So there are periods of time where there'll be slightly more increased rainfall, but you can go hundreds of years without any rain. So we're still trying to figure out the specifics of how that is varied. There is some variability.
I guess what I'm driving at is there any relationship possibly between this change in climate and the cracks that you observe, other than the salt field that you use?
I don't think so. It's tectonics, and obviously the more water we have, we get salt to happen faster, unless it was enough to flush the salt out, which we haven't had in at least 30 million years. It's been arid for over 80 million years there, and hyper-arid for over 30. Any other questions?